Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the North Oakland Speaker Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Evan. I'm an alcoholic and your secretary. Hi, guys. Please turn off your cell phones. Please help me to open the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I have asked Ruby to read a portion of Chapter 3 of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, my name is Ruby and I'm an alcoholic. More about alcoholism. We of alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control. Which led to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which may make an alcoholic of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will have to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing an inability to control their drinking and can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, not taking a trip, swearing it off forever, with or without solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list at infinitum.
Lisa?
Jojo.
Sorry, let's do this thing. This is a speaker meeting. Lisa will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Jojo, who will share his experience, strength, and hope. I'd like to introduce...
Hello, I'm Lisa, and I'm still an alcoholic.
Lisa.
I could just stand up and see everybody. This is a big meeting. I was really nervous until everybody went around and introduced themselves, and I was thinking, God, well, I'm just another one of you. We're all just alcoholics. And so I'm less nervous now, and that's a really good thing, because I was like thinking, man, this would be a good time to have a drink, and that's not really what you're supposed to think when you're about to speak at me. My sobriety date is November 1st, 2012. My home group is Rock Ridge, 9 a.m. I have a sponsor. Talk to her every day, usually by text or email. We meet regularly. I've worked the steps twice through with her in those 2 years. I worked steps 10, 11, and 12 every single day. I have a sponsee, and we're on step 8 right now, and I absolutely love working with her. It is such a gift to be a sponsor. And I was just so worried about the burden of that, and it's not a burden at all. You know, I've been having a hard couple weeks, and, you know, I thought that once I turned 2, I don't know, well, I thought once I turned 1 it would be easy, and then I thought once I turned 2 it would be easy. And life just keeps being life, and humans just keep being humans, and my sponsee really, she really helped me. And she continues to help me just because I got to show up for her, and I got to work with her, and I got to practice what I preach, and I got to walk my talk. And I just learned so much from her, and it's really amazing. So I guess I'm pitching to become a sponsor. I had my first drink at 13, and I actually had 3, and I loved it. And to give you an idea of how old I am, it was California Coolers. A lot of you don't know what that is because you're a lot younger than me. But, yeah, so I had 3 California Coolers, and suddenly this dorky, sort of, like, socially awkward, ugly girl was, like, this sexy, funny, amazing woman who was smart and, like, hanging with the cool kids, especially the cool boys, and, like, I was like, yeah, I'm doing this forever, and I did it for 29 years, and drugs are a huge part of my story, but I'm not going to get too into that because this is AA, but yeah, big part of my story. So I came into AA because I wanted to stop doing all the shameful shit I was doing. And I lived more than just a double life. I would say to my therapist that I have multiple personality disorder, only I see myself being all those different personalities. By day, I was like PTA mom, like super fundraiser woman, and, well, not really just by day, because whenever I was home, I was locked in my bathroom. Well, I'm going to mention the drugs now. Smoking my bong and drinking my beer and drinking my tequila out of little travel bottles that I would keep in the bathroom in the drawers. And my kids would be banging on the door, "Mommy, what are you doing?" "I'm taking a bath." I took a lot of baths. I wasn't really in the tub. But, you know, there was a fan in the bathroom. There was a window in the bathroom. I had this whole elaborate thing. And, you know, listening to the whole, what was that from? A Vision for You? But I don't hear that very often at meetings. And it reminded me, oh, yeah, like all the rules. Like one of the things was like, yeah, if I'm working out, then I'm not really an alcoholic. But most people don't drink beer while they're on their elliptical machine. So, you know, and I had this whole thing about I could only have 3 beers a night when I was home with my family, and so I would starve myself, thank you, all day, so that those 3 beers would be effective, and, you know, and the other stuff was just, there were no limits, but alcohol was, I had a lot of rules around, because I grew up with an alcoholic mother. I'd been to lots of meetings like this when I was a kid, and I knew that once I started to lose control, that I'd have to come here, and I did not want to come here. I did not want to be an alcoholic. Like, I did not want to be my mother. That was my worst fucking nightmare. And I ended up here, and it's just such a blessing. I ran into a friend the other day, and we were talking about recovery. I don't see her that often. I told her I'd had 2 years, and I just said to her, I never thought I'd be a grateful alcoholic, you know, because for me, I hear a lot at meetings that a day without a drink is a good day. And that's a good day. I guess that could be a good day. But that's not enough for me. That is not enough. I want more than just, I got through this day without any goddamn alcohol, you know? That's not enough. That's not what I want. And that's why I work steps 10, 11, and 12 every day. That's why I've worked the steps twice through. That's why I have daily contact with my sponsor. That's why I sit on that fucking meditation cushion every single day, whether I want to or not, and by the time I'm done, I feel not so resentful about it, you know? And sometimes I sit out in the yard. It's not always on the cushion, but, I sit every day. I start my day with prayer every single morning before I get out of bed. I say my prayers, and, you know, it's not for my higher power. It's for me to remember, oh, this is how I do things now. Because I had so many years of doing it that other way. It's so easy to slip back. And that's why step 10 is magical. Because I slip back constantly. I make a ton of mistakes. But because of step 10, I get to promptly admit it, which sometimes sucks. But, you know, I do it anyway. I'm learning a lot about humility through that. I get to make amends, and I get to learn. And that's the really, really key important part, is learning from my mistakes. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't learn unless there's pain and discomfort and it's crappy. You know, that's when I'm going to learn. And the more pain, the bigger the lesson and the bigger the growth. So, step 12, a lot of people talk about step 12 as just being of service. I really concentrate on the practicing the principles in all of my affairs piece of it. And that just goes back to a day, you know, without drinking is fine. But there's so much more to it. I want to be the best mom I can be. I want to be the best worker among workers. I don't want to be the top of the heap or, you know, underneath. I want to just be awesome as one of the workers, you know. I want to have a connection with a higher power. I want to be present in my day, and I want to feel like if my day, this is my last, that it was a good life, you know. I mean, those are lofty goals, but I have a lot of super great days like that. And I end my day every single night with a gratitude list that I text my first sponsor who moved to New York. And I've been doing it since I was less than 60 days sober. And even the most painful day, I can come up with 5 things I'm grateful for before I go to bed. And it just, like, you know, last night on my list was the leaves on the trees that the city of Berkeley put on our street, and they are so beautiful right now in the autumn, and they were just city trees. Like, I didn't have to buy that tree, and they're like decorating, and it looks like New England or something on my street right now. I grew up here, so I don't really know what real autumn is like, but it seems pretty cool right now on my street. And like, I'm so grateful for that, you know. I'm grateful that I am driven for recovery, that I just keep hanging in here and working really hard. And, you know, as far as being driven for recovery, I'm starting to learn, just a little bit, that there are many ways to do life and that my way isn't the only way. So if you're not somebody who, you know, isn't getting anything out of what I have to say, well, then JoJo's going to say it. No. But, you know, there are lots of ways to work the program. There are lots of different experiences. My way works really well for me. And it changes, too. Like, I've evolved and changed. Some of the people in this room have seen me evolve and change. And so this is just my one way, and I love that AA is a place where these are the steps that are suggested as a program of recovery. Nobody says we have to do it. I don't really know anybody who stays sober and doesn't do it, but, you know, they don't say you got to. And nobody says this is what you have to believe. No, there's none of that. And so with that, I think I'll end, and I wish you all much to be grateful for as you go to bed tonight.
Okay, I am JoJo Alcoholic, and I was trying to convince our first speaker to switch with me. So this is my first time at this meeting, and you know what? It's a pretty awesome meeting. I got sober in L.A., so this is like the size of an L.A. meeting, like a regular L.A. meeting. When I moved up here to the Bay Area almost 5 years ago, you know, I just got so used to, like, the smaller kind of tiny meetings and stuff. So this is, like, pretty cool. Thank you for your share. Welcome to the newcomers. Anybody relapse or newcomer, anybody that's just having a moment today, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Saturday night meeting. If you don't hear anything I say that's important, there's a meeting. There might be a meeting after this somewhere. Or you can talk to me in the parking lot or somewhere. I had like a total amazing thing happen earlier. I was over at a friend's house in Alameda, and he's a person that's not in the program, and he was having a little get together, and I said, you know, I'll help you out and stuff. And so I helped him, you know, with moving tables and putting out stuff, and there was just a lot of people there, a lot of people I didn't know, and there was people drinking, but not like the way I drank. You know, people were just like holding like a glass of wine really kind of casually, and it's weird because it's like I've been sober for quite a while, and even when I get into situations like that, I kind of feel awkward. I feel like, you know, if there's someone in the program near me, I can, like, have that little program talk, you know, our language of underground language that we have here. And it was funny because there was a mutual friend that was there whose wife just turned 30 days sober. And he had mentioned, somebody was talking about something totally not related to the program, and he said, oh, you know, we should give you a chip like they do in AA, you know. And the guy said, oh, my wife's turning 30 days sober. And I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I said, you know, I'm coming up on an anniversary. And the guy that was sitting next to me, like, just looked at, you know, gives them a look, you know, that look like, oh, there's another Bill W. here, you know. And he just said, oh, how much time do you have, and how long have you been sober? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm coming up on 17 years. And he goes, I just turned 32 years sober. And it was just like, and then, of course, we're like sitting in the car. And so it was just like, things like that happen to me all the time. And, you know, so I got sober at an early age. So if anybody's here, like, in their 20s, God bless you. You know, I originally got sober at 20 years old. I basically went into rehab in upstate New York, and my rehab, so I was so messy that they would not send me back to the city. You know, they wouldn't send me back. My parents live in Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn, and they wouldn't send me back. They were just like, you can't go back, you know. So they shipped me to L.A., like across the country, you know. And they actually said, one of my counselors at the rehab in upstate New York, they said, we're going to send you to a recovery house in Silver Lake. Now, I had never been to the West Coast before. And I thought they were talking about upstate New York. I was like, is that in Yonkers somewhere? Or, you know. And so they shipped me out to L.A., And I feel so grateful because I am just biased here. I adore Southern California sobriety. I've got used to not clapping here. I was just in, and this was like a gift from the program. I was just in like Hawaii for the first time. I was in Waikiki last week. I just got back in. I'm trying to keep my tan. And then everybody claps in the Waikiki meetings because I haven't been to meetings in LA for a while. And I was just like, whoa, you know, there's like so much time taken up with clapping, you know? The funny thing is that nobody wanted to share. Like, is it, you know, when they say, is anybody wants to share? And everybody's like, They're just like looking at each other, and then there's that one person that like says, "I can't take it anymore. I need to share." I mean, do you ever see that at meetings? Like people just there's like this silent kind of insecurity that happens, and then one person like a good old if you scratch the surface of an alcoholic, you get an Al-Anon, which is like amazing because those are the people that raise their hand first because they just can't take the silence. Okay. So I got a couple of minutes to share. So I'm going to, like, I did not even know what I was going to share about tonight. Like, I was over at my friend's party, and then I met up with a guy's sponsor, and so I kind of was like, this was the cool kids meeting. Like, yeah. And like, I agreed, our first speaker and I mentioned, like, I'm, like, usually in PJs now. Like, I'm, like, watching, you know, Saturdays are my Sundays. I work on Sundays. So, like, now I'm just watching, like, Top Model or Survivor, one of those shows on TV. And I got sober at 20. I am a relapser, so I am aware of whoever shared. I was so self-obsessed I wasn't paying attention, but I know there was a relapser in this room. There might be more. And so I got sober at 20. I was in rehab, got sent out to Silver Lake, and then I started going to meetings in L.A., and I relapsed a bunch of times. I never left the rooms, but I relapsed a lot. You know, I didn't know anybody in LA, just people in the program. So I basically, you know, I just kind of went to meetings. I relapsed, went to meetings, relapsed, went to meetings. And it got pretty old pretty quickly, you know, because it's like, you know, my ego was kind of like, I didn't want to raise my hand and stuff. But no one ever turned me away. You know, I had some sponsors say, don't hang out with JoJo, you know. And so I got, you know, my first, like, real big relapse. I'm also, like, I had a real serious problem with anxiety, and I started having panic attacks, and I started having, like, really bad, you know, like, I just kind of started feeling... You know, I've always been a social person. I always like to be around people. I always loved bars. I mean, when I was, like, really partying in New York, it was like I was always out in clubs all the time, and the bars and the clubs and running around. And that was just kind of like, I thought that that was life, you know. But then when I got sober, I really had no social skills. I really didn't know how to act. I mean, all I knew was, like, you know, manipulate and just try to, like... And bullshit. Manipulation and bullshit. You know, that's what came out of me. That's how I got what I got. And so I had a hard time with the anxiety thing. I started getting really anxious and stuff. And of course, you know, like, here's the thing. Around here, like, people say, like, you know, I'm on doctor-prescribed medication, and I'm on this, I'm on that. And so I just went to a doctor. I said, I'm having panic attacks. You know, like, I'm feeling anxious. And he just wrote a prescription for Klonopin and said, take as needed, you know. And so, like, I was, like... You know, taking them as needed. And I remember I was like, you know, I was like, I remember going to meetings, I secretaried a meeting, and I must have taken a bunch of Klonopin. You know, and I was just like, all mellow, you know, it was the JoJo show, you know, and it was not cute. You know, it was just not cute. And you know, it just got worse, and getting off that stuff is not pretty, so I don't recommend it to anybody, you know. And I got sober again, and then, because I did so many hard drugs, and I drank so much, like, I thought, the last time I relapsed, I thought, I'm only going to smoke pot and drink Rolling Rock beer. Like, that was, like, that was my formula. Because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm really good at formulas. Like, if I don't do this, this will happen. You know? And it's like, I love. Even in sobriety, I do this, where I think, well, if I don't, you know, like, if I don't do this, then I could reward myself. Don't you notice alcoholics love rewarding themselves? Like, it's like, well, I didn't tell a lie for a month. You know? It's like, okay. You know? And so... I end up, you know, and it was 1997. I had relapsed with a bunch of friends of mine and stuff, And it was kind of a tough year. And my mom was passing away. She was back in New York. She had cancer. She had terminal cancer. And my mom was like we had like a really enmeshed relationship. I was like the baby, and she basically spoiled me. And like I knew I could get anything from mom. Mom was like the person that, you know, when you're like kicked out of everywhere and your tail between your legs, I could call her and say, I need $20, you know. And she was that type of person for me. And we had just like the most toxic relationship with each other. And I'm still talking about her in therapy. Right. The fact that I'm talking about her now, she made an impact on my life. You know? So my mother, she was passing away, and my brother did like the coolest thing ever. He basically, like, I remember calling for like, the many times I called to ask for money because like rent was due, or I needed some more Rolling Rock. You know, it was just like something insane. And my brother just said, "She can't help you anymore. We can't help you anymore," and hung up on me. And of course, I took it all personal. Like, I hate him. You know, like, it's all his fault. And like we do, or like I do. And I had a little slippery path. Like, I just couldn't, the emotional effect of my mom dying kind of pushed me over the edge, you know. And it was like, I look at it as a gift because, like, her death kind of catapulted me back into the program. And so on December 31st, I was that messy to get sober on New Year's Eve, not New Year's Day. I walked into a meeting and I got sober, you know, and I basically knew everybody in the meetings. Like, they were all like, "Hey, what's up?" And of course, I was so embarrassed. I don't know if anybody's relapsed in this room, and you go to that first meeting, and you're like, they're all going to notice. They're all going to take, like, they're going to know, and they're talking about me. Believe me, they're not. They're like, everybody's in their head. You know, everybody's in their head. And we welcome you here. We like seeing people like relapsers come in here and say it didn't work. I mean, that's like the purpose of this meeting, is to say like, hey, we're here, you know. And so my first couple years back sober, it was like tough because I was having panic attacks and I was having anxiety and I couldn't go to like fellowship with people because I was like, I didn't want to be around restaurants. Like, I mean, it was just like irrational, crazy stuff that was going in my head. And it was real to me. You know, if anybody in this room has been a panic attack sufferer, or if anybody's dealt with any kind of anxiety, social, whatever, you know that it's real. Like, I remember when people used to say stuff like, "Oh, just relax, yeah. Just take a breath, relax." And you're like, "Call the ambulance." And I've been in the hospital. I remember going to the, and then the worst, you want to hear this? The worst is when you go into the ambulance and they have you in the little gurney and you're like, "I'm having a panic, I'm dying, I'm having a heart attack," and you don't understand. And you can't breathe, and you're practically having a heart attack because you can't breathe. And then when you get to the hospital and then the doctor checks you and you're okay, and then you're like, you have to like sneak out of the hospital, all embarrassed, right? And and then it's like you have like a reprieve. You'll be anxious like 15 minutes later, like once you get home. I don't know where I was going with that, but so I stayed. So what happened with me with that was I had to work the steps. That kind of alleviated a lot of my anxiety. I remember I was at a meeting one day. It was a really big meeting on a Saturday night, and there was this woman that shared that she had panic attacks her first 8 years of sobriety. And when I heard, see, this is the magic about Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to hear things in here that people have gone through, that we're going through. It's like, I sponsor a bunch of people, and I really like, lately I really like sponsoring like people with a little bit of sobriety. Before I didn't, but now like people with like younger in sobriety that don't have too much like AA experience, like when they start saying unique stuff, like when they really start saying, "Oh my God," like just like these really magical, unique things. Like I always say, "Well, honey, that's not going to work. You can't really date someone that's doing crack. It's just not going to work." There's like this glaze on their face. But I can do it. I can do it. I've done it, you know, and that's a great thing. It's like we just build up experience here, and, you know, it's like, you know, don't date somebody, I date somebody. Don't move, I move. Don't quit your job. Don't, like, curse out your boss and then quit, you know, like, and it's like, we think we're doing, like, this unique thing. Like, I totally think, like, I'm just, like, unique individual, and it's funny because then I come in here and I hear other people have done it and it didn't work, you know. And so I started working the steps, and that kind of alleviated, like doing an inventory alleviated a lot of my fear, and I started seeing like my anxiety level lessen. And I was going to a lot of meetings. I've always gone to a lot of meetings. And I've always had commitments, even if I was feeling anxious or not. And to this day, like, you know, I mean, I'm you know, 16 years and 11 months sober. And, you know, hopefully I'll get to December 31st this year and become 17 years sober. And it's like I go to a lot of meetings. I sponsor a bunch of people. It's exactly what you said. It's like... it's like I have a setup commitment. I do scrolls at a meeting. I put these scrolls up at the Sunday meeting, and I'm always like forgetting it. Like, I'm at the meeting because I'm too busy gossiping. And so I'm like, oh, the secretary just goes, you know. And so, you know, the thing is, it's like, there's nothing unique. You have to, pretty much what I do is like I go to meetings every day, I take commitments, I sponsor a lot of people, I see my sponsor once a week, I have the guys that sponsor me call me every day, you know, they just call me every day, and it's like the reason why I do this because like I want a relationship with them, like I want them to know, I really want them to know that if they are too afraid to call anybody if they're going to drink, that they can call me. They'll be so relaxed and calm to call me, you know. And it's just like, I need to have that connection. I have that connection with my sponsor. Like, I could call him for anything. Like, it doesn't matter how idiotic I think it sounds. And most of the time when I think something's idiotic, it's usually serious stuff. Because I try to talk myself out of it. And so I have a crew of people that I can run past stuff. And... you know, it's like taking commitments have like actually taught me like really good things at work. Like I show up on time at work. I help out my coworkers. Like my one of my coworkers, you know, like we don't get to choose our coworkers, right? So it's like one of my coworkers is like, you know, he's a piece of work, and so like, but it's like I help him out all the time. And, you know, even when he goes, no, it's okay, I've got it. I'm like, no, it's cool. Like, I have some time. Let's do this, you know. And it's like, and I tell my boss, like, when I feel uncomfortable, like, if my boss starts getting, I don't use this word in front of him or anybody at work, but my boss gets real passive aggressive. And so my sponsor's like, you can't call your boss passive aggressive. But I get to say stuff like, you know what, Mike? You know, when you left that note for everybody to see, it made me feel really uncomfortable. But you want to know something? It's those lovely I statements. But you want to know something? That shit just works. It really works. And you know what? I don't know how to take care of myself. Like, that stuff scares the S out of me. You know? That stuff scares... that really, taking care of myself scares the shit out of me. You know? Like... I was in Waikiki with a friend of mine, and he was like doing, you know, he was driving like a maniac, and I said, be careful, and he yelled out, he's like, I know what I'm doing, and I, you know what I said to him, because I wasn't a douchebag back, I said, please don't talk to me like that, and he just went, he just got real quiet, and of course, I felt the yuckies, I felt like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that, you know, like... You know, it's like babes, and this is like at almost 17 years sober. Like, the road gets real narrow, kids. So I'll tell you like a really funny story. I can't believe, how much time do you have? Is that?
Yeah, you got like
15 minutes. 15 minutes.
Okay.
You can hear it. So
we can talk about the leaves and
parking.
So I'll share something with you. So like. two things. One, so I worked the steps, and this was a source of embarrassment for me for a really long time, because I had done really good fourth and fifth steps. I did really cool sixth and seventh steps. You know, I was like all gung-ho with that. But once I started getting around to the eighth step, you know, that making that list, I remember then I would like stop calling my sponsor, and then I'll be like, well, I don't really like him, you know, he gossips too much, and you know, we create those like real yucky resentments, because we just want to sneak away like a little snake, you know, like it's like, oh yeah, you know, he doesn't call me, he didn't return my phone call, you know, and so you get real resentful, and you punish them for like a month or so, and so I start doing that. And then I would have sponsors say, like, you know, what's up? You know, like, and then I'd be like, well, I found somebody else, you know, like, and it was like, I would always, like, kind of, like, disappear, like, at eight or nine. And this was going on for a while. And I will attest to you that, like, this program is really all about the 12 steps. So we kind of have to work that here. That's, like, imperative, right? I mean, it's all social, going to meetings, doing the do, all that fun stuff is great. But it's like ultimately, like if you're on a deserted island, you have your sponsor with you, you do the 12 steps, right? And so, you know, so when I left LA, I thought I was like all enlightened and stuff. And when I came up here, I was like, I'm from LA, and I know SoCal sobriety. And then it was funny, because then I started like, I was realizing I was having, and this is like, I moved up here when I was about 13 years sober. I was having a lot of financial stuff. I don't know if you guys could understand about financial stuff. And it was like stuff that kept me up at night, you know, because I was never taught checkbooks. I've never talked about debting. I was never talked about any of this in my household, right? I wasn't aware of it. I have always been vague about money. It just, either you give it to me, or like, you know, like if I get a paycheck, I think, you know, the money that's in this paycheck is the money I get to spend, you know, and I just forget about all my responsibilities. And it gets painful. It gets painful when you start debting and you start not paying bills, and you start owing people money, and you avoid the student loan, and you know, like the mail comes in and you kind of chuck it, and then when you shred it and throw it out, you feel like it doesn't exist. So, and here's the thing. Part of my ninth step is a lot of financial stuff. And since I got sober at an early age, like, a lot of it wasn't from drinking and using. Because, like, a lot of that drinking and using stuff, you can use that as a real good excuse. I was drunk. You know, like I used to like to buy people drinks and stuff. But it was, like, most of my stuff was from sobriety. And so what happened was, I started working with this sponsor, and he's just like a real amazing guy, and I trust him, and I love this guy so much. And he just said, we're going to do your steps. We started working the steps, and it was all real casual, and it was great. And then when we got to my eighth step, because my fourth and fifth step, like, I started talking about, like, oh, yeah, I owe this one money, and I owe this one money, and I owe this one. Because all inventories are different. They're all the same. But, you know, some things, you know, you might have anger on your inventory. You might have, like, you know, all this stuff. But a lot of my stuff was financial stuff. And so my sponsor basically said, okay, well, I'm going to do your eighth step and ninth step soon. So you just be prepared. And at the time, I wasn't, like, I moved up here, I wasn't working that much, I wasn't doing much, right? And I was still having really deep financial insecurity. It was just like that painful kind of stuff, like, I owe people money, but I don't have money, so how can I pay people back, you know? And so, ultimately, what I did was, I did that eighth step, and the way I do the eighth step, like, it's the same way my sponsor did it. You just do that list, and then you start kind of, you know, figuring it all out. And I remember my sponsor telling me, he's like, well, how much do you owe this person? And I was like, oh, like a couple of $1,000, I don't know. And he goes, well, no, you can't be vague. We need amounts. And it was funny, because there was actually one time that somebody was like holding me accountable and saying, you cannot be vague anymore. You have to be real specific. Mm-hmm. Because people who are vague just going to walk around in life in a daze. right? So I remember at the time, like, he goes, oh, let's take an easy one. And I owed an old sponsor. I can't believe it's like $60. And it was like, and these little things, like, it's not the big stuff, like the student loan, all that stuff, that big stuff weighs on my mind, but it's like these little stuff that, you know, you have people that come back into your life and you see them, you're like, oh, I owe them money. So then I started paying. He goes, I promise you. And sponsors can't promise anything, but he promised me. He said, I promise you it's going to get better if you start doing this. So I started doing it. And, of course, here's the thing about vagueness. Like, when I think I owe somebody, when I know I owe somebody $1,000, I think I need to pull $1,000 out of my pocket and pay them. Like, my sponsor's like, no. We do this real slow to remind us what we've done and to remember what's the amends. And so, like, I started paying this guy $10. You know, he's like, cool, you know. And then he goes, and I didn't even have the money. Like, it's like $10 for me was like a major thing. And it was funny because as I started doing it, like, literally a month later, like, I got this job. Like, it was just, like, landed to me. Now, that could have been, you know, it could be mystery or fate or something like that. But I get this job. And then, of course, like, I call my sponsor. And this is at 13 years sober. I call my sponsor. I'm like, I got this job. It's great. Blah, blah, blah. I'm getting paid this much. I'm working in the city. Blah, blah, blah. He goes, oh, great. So now you can start paying more people back. Right? And I remember when I had this student loan, like, this. And I thought my student loan was, like, you know, like the national debt. Like, in my mind, I thought I am not going to pay the student loan because I'm never going to. I mean, it's going to be forever, right? I thought I'll buy a Prius instead. You know, I'm not paying this. And of course, I call them, and you got to see they dropped the phone. Like, I was like, I want to pay my debt. And on the other line, the guy dropped the phone. He was just like, oh, wait a second, I'm going to put you on hold, but hold on. And then, like, I had, like, two people on the phone, you want to pay your debt back, okay. So, and it was like this, and I never forget, it was a Saturday morning, and I'm sitting there with my coffee, and I'm thinking, like, they're going to send someone to my house, you know. And my sponsor made me bookend him, like, I had to call him afterwards. And he goes, and it was so funny because my sponsor said, like, you can actually tell them how much you want to pay. Like, it's not that major. Like, they're not going to take all that money. They ask you at first, trust me. They're like, what do you have to pay? You know, it was like $7,000. Like, this was a couple years ago. Like, I'm already down to like $3,000. And it's like, I'm not even paying that much. And I'm giving you amounts because I'm not trying not to be vague. But it was just like, $7,000 in my head was 40 grand, right? So, like, I have this really fucked up perception of things, you know? And so, like, now it's like, I'm paying people back. I hit all the little dinky payments back, so I'm like feeling cute and everything. And it's funny because, like, every time I see my sponsor every week, and I always get nervous because he's gonna say, who's next? Who do you have to pay next? So, like, I try to, like, you know, like when we start talking about financial mess, I kind of avoid it a little bit because I'm still paying two people back, and it's like, I want him done. Like, I got really frustrated because someone I owed money to, like, it literally kept track and sent me, like, invoices. This is really funny. I was secretary once at a meeting. No, I was coffee person at a meeting. And I bought, like, two big things of Coffee Mates, and I borrowed money from him. He had that on the invoice. It was, like, 1998 Coffee Mate. And I was like, that was from an AA meeting, you know. And so I'm sending him money, like, every month, and, you know. And it was funny because, you know, sometimes when you start paying people back, people don't want to get paid back because they want to have that, like, they want to have that little hold, you know. And so, like, what happened was, like, he didn't cash the check. There was, like, 2 months he didn't cash the check. I was like, what's up? So I called him up. Of course, I wanted to avoid it because I was thinking, oh, it's, you know, that's my money now. And so I called him, and my sponsor said this specifically because I don't know the language. I just want to say, F you. I'm not paying you anymore. I mean, this is what I told my sponsor. I'm like, fuck him. I'm not paying him anymore. He's already got $1,200 from me. That's it. Done. Final. I'm amends. It's amended. My sponsor said, and I sometimes I get really irritated with my sponsor. He goes, "You need to tell him this. You need to say, you know, when you don't cash the checks, it doesn't make me feel like my payment's important and that you don't. It doesn't mean much to you. So, do you want us to end this?" And I'm thinking, like, I can't believe I'm going to say this to him. And of course, he says, "Oh, I'm not going to end it." You know, he's like, "You need to pay me back." And then I was like, "Okay, so let's get it clear. We got it clear." And then, of course, I went back to my sponsor. I'm like, "I'm going to start paying him back more." Right? And then, you know, like, I just do what somebody else tells me to do. Really, when I am unsupervised, when I don't have a communication with a sponsor, if I don't have a crew of people I'm chit-chatting with, if I don't have, like, this kind of connection with Alcoholics Anonymous, I get myself into trouble. I get myself into trouble sober. I have the ism. I will use sex. I will use TV. I will use fantasy. I will use people, places, and things to get me outside of myself when I'm unsupervised. So a lot of times I get nervous when I'm going to meetings and it starts getting boring. You know, when meetings get boring and you're just like, oh, it's the same thing. You know, I could be at home, you know, watching TV. And it's like when I start feeling like that and I start feeling like I'm trying to isolate. And there's a good thing. There's an okay thing about being alone and having your own time. But when it gets to the point where you're just like, creating stuff. I create stuff in my mind. Like, they all hate me. I don't need to be there. They don't do this the right way. You know, like, and it's like when I go into that state of mind is when I need to start talking to people. And that's the cool thing about having a connection with people I sponsor. They call me every day. They check in with me every day. I make it all about them. I really do. They ask me, "How are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm fine. What's going on?" You know? And so I am a very selfish person. I was always very selfish as a kid. I was always very selfish, very self-centered. And for me to give back, like on a regular basis in Alcoholics Anonymous, has actually made me a human being. There are days where I feel crazy, insecure. There's days where I feel like a complete and total disaster, and I go there. Like, there's times where I literally will just be like, "I hate this planet. I hate everybody on it. I want off." You know what I'm saying? And then I have to turn off the news. You know, and yeah. Like, that's pretty much, you know, or get off of Twitter, you know. And so, but the reality of the matter is that I am, you know, all I ever wanted, like, when I first got sober and I was, like, really young, all I ever wanted was to, like, be, like, to have, like, property, a car, you know, like some money in the bank. Like, I didn't get a checking account until I got sober. I didn't, like, get my driver's license until I got sober. Like, I used to look at, like, people that I idolized or people that had apartments, you know. That was, like, what I thought. That was my goals when I first got sober. And it's, like, to just transform into, like, what I feel somewhat is a human being, you know, is that it's, like, success for me. You know, it's like a lot of times when I go into, like, I haven't done this yet, or I should have been done this, or I should have taken this road, is really, really, really kind of shitting on myself. Because, like, you know, and I always thought it was cliche, and people like, "You're at the right place at the right time," you know? But the thing is, I am. I totally, totally am. It was like, at that party, I'm sitting right next to someone that has 32 years of sobriety. And I can't even tell you how many times that, like, I've been in situations where my ass has been saved, you know. And it's all due to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've grown up here. Like, I've literally grown up here. And it's, like, it's been such an awesome thing. And you know, I try to, like, where my sobriety, it's like it's like attraction, not promotion. Like, I'm really, like, I want people to know, like, you know, like, I'm sober and I'm doing the do. You know, I don't want it to be like, you know, I'm up here telling you one thing and then I go out and I'm cussing someone out. When I drive, I get a little bit. It's just part of my being from Brooklyn, I guess, or just being in this planet, you know. But it's like, I feel like Alcoholics Anonymous, like, it's made me an adult, it's literally made me an adult. And for that, like, I'm grateful. And I'm really, thank you, David, for asking me to share. It's been an amazing ride, and I wish you all, like, a wonderful, awesome sobriety. Thank you for letting me share.